We acknowledge the Lutjiwita people, the traditional owners of the land the upcoming game is played on, and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Welcome to Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu, the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max born to live.
They cause some havoc at the home of football. Collingwood is in free fall. And you wonder how far to go to find rock bottom.
I think the general expectation on us has been a lot greater than our capacity, full stop. But that doesn't mean that we don't want to be doing better. So, yeah, I'm disappointed.
Week of intense scrutiny, losing their fifth game in a row, this time against the Rising Suns. And Nathan Buckley resets expectation versus reality.
With a high chipper, can they mark it? They can! It's Cameron in the pocket! Did it travel enough? Was it touched? What are they doing? They're throwing it in!
Well, look, the division, and it's clear it did, but it's a different perspective for the umpire. He can't go back and replay the vision. They're tough call.
And did footy karma play a part in an inaccurate catch snatching defeat from the jaws of victory against the Swans? Dan Richardson, the head of umpiring, is going to speak on that at 1 p.m. today. Good afternoon. You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to live, the first ever Sunday Crunch Time. It's an absolute honour to be bringing you the first edition of Sunday Crunch Time. The award-winning Crunch Time has set the benchmark for the discussions around football every Saturday. And to bring it to you on a Sunday now is something that we take with great pride, and we will do our best to uphold the standards that the team set on a Saturday. Good afternoon and welcome, Sam Hargroves, joined by Matt Hill, Michael Barlow as well. We'll get to you in a moment, Michael Barlow, because you really did come in this morning with a real spring in the step. Werribee getting their first win under your coaching. But Matty Hill, Australia's greatest race caller, and now just an absolutely wonderful addition to the AFL Nation team. Good afternoon.
Sam, lovely to be with you, and Michael as well. Still up and about from that match last night, and there's still plenty to discuss with that extraordinary performance by the Swans. And what about the vision of that Papley goal and the ladies stand crowd just going ballistic? It was just one of the greatest bits of vision from the weekend, and can't wait to dissect it with you guys.
It'll live on beautifully. And Michael Barlow, not often that you get your first win to the tune of 80 points, but you now at the helm of Werribee, and you did it against Richmond. You must be feeling very, very happy with yourself, I reckon, today.
No, Sam, Matt, good to be in. First ever Crunch Time, but nowhere I'd rather be, because usually on a Sunday afternoon I'd be coding the game. In the last 2 weeks at VFL level, we've gone down. And I tell you what, it's not much fun coding a game that you lose in. So yesterday for Werribee to get our first win was incredibly pleasing. And the old, get six players up on the board to put in the best, Matt, couldn't do it.
Is that right?
Old team effort. The old team effort went to the paper, I hope today. But, great feeling, Matt. Great feeling.
So when you say coding the game, watch the tape two or three times, notes. How long does this take you?
Do you know what, Matt? I'm very, very lucky. I've got some great assistant coaches, and I'm actually learning in the head coach role, you can delegate a lot of responsibility. So you get all this great vision from my backline coach, my mids coach, my forwards coach, and development coaches, and then I just pick and choose what we need to use. So that's my Sunday, but very much looking forward to the game later on today and dissecting yesterday's events, in particular the Sydney Swans Geelong game.
There is plenty to get through, and we will do our best to cover it all. And but before we do that, we need to just pay our respects and acknowledge the very sad passing of a titan of the football world, really, Frank Costa, at the age of 83, who had been battling ill health for about a year now. Of course, what he did for the Geelong Football Club, almost immeasurable, but was one of the saviours of a club that when he took the helm was in dire straits. And he, at 83 years of age, he has sadly left us. His wife Shirley, the eight daughters, one of the most influential figures in the Cats' history. We know, incredibly successful businessman, the fruit and veg empire. He joined the board of Geelong in 1996. He was president 2 years later. The club was in dire straits and under threat at that time of having to be either relocated from Geelong or, at the very least, playing all their home games in Melbourne. But he and Brian Cook went about keeping the Cats in Geelong. They were able to do that. The rebuild of Cadinia Park, and then 2007, that flag. And he enjoyed another one in 2009 before retiring in 2010. A much-loved and revered member of the Geelong and the football community. His charity work, second to none. He leaves an incredible legacy on the Cats and on the game. Vale Frank Costa, sad day for footy.
Yeah, and it was that period leading into those 07-09 finals when, you're right, Geelong were kind of neither here nor there, and there were some really key figureheads, of which Frank Costa was namely the number one, along with Mark Thompson as the coach who they stuck with. And onwards and upwards for the hoops. And I think when you think about Frank Costa, you think about the hoops of Geelong.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are thinking of the of his family, Shirley, and eight daughters as well for Frank, and the Geelong footy community, the Geelong community, and the football world in general. And I know that it wasn't just in the world of footy that Frank had such an impact. I mean, he was the patron of countless charities and the work he did for his church and just the list of what he was able to do and the way in which he was able to help so many different organisations and people is a list that, and this might be the highest praise you can get, is a list that's probably too long for us to be able to go through. So he will be missed. Gents, there is a lot to put on the agenda today. We're going to be speaking to Swans midfielder Ollie Florent in the next 9 minutes. And you can get involved all day. Social feedback for Summit Internet, faster business internet. Head to at AFL Nation on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you. 0433 98 11 16 as well on the text machine. When we think about yesterday, it dished up storyline after storyline after storyline. So we'll go through all of those, but just the results that came through. The Pies lost to the Gold Coast, and it was a win that they really couldn't afford. And yesterday I was able to see a statistic, which sort of just goes to show you, I suppose, the lack of experience that the Suns had at the SCG. Scott Pendlebury had played more games and kicked more goals than the whole 22 of the Suns combined at the MCG. So that was the lack of experience that they brought to the table. But from Stuart Jew, who said, this one felt mature. We came to play our way, and they absolutely did. Took Miller back-to-back 30-plus games. Jack Bowes is putting together one hell of a season off halfback. And Josh Corbett kicking four goals, a mature prospect, came through the VFL.
From Werribee. So he kicked the four yesterday.
It was as an impressive performance as we've seen, I think, from the Suns.
And I think, Sam, the most mature element of it was they backed up a really good effort against the Swans the week before. So I think in years gone by, it's been this big elation after a win for the Suns and then resting on their laurels to an extent and backing that up from 1 week to the next. And they would have really understood there is so much that should be put on the fact that Collingwood had the week from hell, and you can imagine what the week's going to be like for this week. But players lift and players are driven by those type of weeks to respond. 14 out of the 22 for the Pies yesterday played in that 2018 grand final. So in terms of the products that both sides put out, and Sam, you alluded to it brilliantly, the Suns didn't have a right really to get to where they got to. And you mentioned Bowes, you mentioned Tuk Miller, and then the emergence of King Corbett. 2 weeks in a row is what I'm most impressed about for the Suns. But I suppose the real talking point from that, Matt, that match was the Collingwood Magpies.
Well, the narrative had changed during the week, hasn't it, to instead of talking about finals, working out where they sit in the pecking order. And I think they're learning very quickly where they do sit. It's all about working up as opposed to trying to stay in the finals. So where do they sit, in your opinion?
Well, it's now time. If I look at their side from yesterday and you start to think when you are a 1-6 football club and finals are now considered,
gone.
And pardon the pun, Buckley's chance. Mm. You look at the list of who may make way. So they did drop. They went into this match and it was clear. The talk during the week was they still thought 2021 had some purpose in terms of reaching the finals. So they dropped five players with a combined tally of somewhere between 40 and 50 matches in Majdan. Rantel came and played one game, got dropped. So they essentially backed in their experience, and that those experienced players didn't deliver. And if we look on through their list, guys like Chris Mayne, where does Josh Thomas sit going forward? Where does the likes of Levi Greenwood, you know, long term? I think it, the writing may be on the wall for players like that and those younger players that have had fleeting exposure to AFL will get a real opportunity at Collingwood.
So Nathan Buckley said, matter-of-factly, we couldn't defend them and that they need to improve their DNA, that they've lost their DNA, which is being able to defend. He said that the Suns were able to move the ball through them just too easily. So it's their worst start since 2005. They've lost five in a row. Nathan Buckley pointed out the fact that they've been favourites in the last four games and he's got no idea why. But the most telling thing that he said was in the audio that we played during the opener, where he said that the expectation, the general expectation on us is greater than the capacity. So the question was then asked for him, is there a disconnect then between upper levels and yourself about where this team is at? And he said, I'm clear on where we're at. So he's clear, and he said, I don't sugarcoat it. We expect to perform better. But the expectation now, the reality. So even during the week, you had Mark Corder talking about the fact that they hope to play finals and putting finals on the agenda. So it was a fair question that was asked. Is there a disconnect and is there a misunderstanding internally at Collingwood about where they're at? Because Buckley seems very sure of where they're at, whereas others think we're still contending here.
And it was that a possibility that Buckley knew where they were at before the first bounce was, you know, sent in the air in round one?
In terms of what happened to that to the Collingwood Football Club over that trade period, and that magnifies what is happening now, doesn't it? I think in terms of what they can bring in, even into next year with salary cap squeeze and whatnot, is essentially nothing because they're still, you know, Treloar's still on the books, Phillips is still on the books, and they've had to already get rid of these players that are part of a hugely successful, you know, fabric of the Collingwood Football Club. And then, you know, what's next?
So we also spoke about the fact that there wasn't just the four players that they lost during the trade week, last trade period. It was also the players that retired and left the club, whether it be through Broomhead, who they delisted, but Lyndon Dunn retired, Tom Langdon retired, Ben Reid retired, so Travis Varko retired. So that was experience that they had in and around the group as well that they don't have now, and they've also lost those high-calibre players trying to free up cap space. But it is going to come back to a couple of things as well, the choices that they've made in terms of cap space. And I want to point out a stat yesterday again. So the Suns don't have a ruckman playing at the moment. They don't have one.
And the salary cap to Grundy is...
Brody Grundy and the Pies had... The hit-outs were 50-14, but they lost centre clearance. So Grundy had 37 of his own. They had 50 all up. The Suns had 14 total hit-outs, yet they lost centre clearance 11-10 and were only plus 7 in around the ground clearance. It's the same story, but it continues to occur when it comes to what's going on in the middle of the ground, which is where it all, as you as a midfielder, Mickey B, you know that that's where it all starts. Nathan Buckley can say that those stats are overplayed, but it's the same narrative that's happening in games where this is a game that, even though he can't understand why they were favourites, but I think we expected them to put up at least a better performance than the 24 points.
And Ross Lyon always used to say, the trend's your friend. And at the moment, the trend isn't Collingwood's friend in terms of their midfield numbers and their dominance aerially with Grundy in there providing first use, but not being able to execute from the stoppage. You know, in particular, the centre square bounce is the really concerning element because, you know, around the ground stoppages, clubs have gone to town on Collingwood and thought, right, we'll send players in and bottle it up and make sure that you know, it's a bit of a dogfight in there. Whereas a centre bounce against a side that doesn't have a ruckman, Grundy should be able to Nick Natanui it and just be able to offhand, you know, put it wherever he likes, get players on the run, burst the bubble of the centre circle to put players into space. So there is a lack of creativity, from my opinion, in terms of what Collingwood are trying to implement, in particular with that aerial dominance of which Grundy's providing.
How much does it take out of a team, this constant narrative of, you know, Buckley wants to coach, Buckley doesn't want to coach, will he hold on as coach? In the end, it's like working in an organisation, isn't it, when the CEO's, you know, questionably going to leave or not leave. Well, you know, how much does it take out of a team? And the trust factor and... You know, just the will to want to play for someone.
And from my experience, it was so. Mark Harvey in my second year of AFL got kind of sideswiped with no one seeing it coming. So from a player's point of view, it was just again we're oblivious to the fact. Ross Lyon, when we went 0-10 for Fremantle in 2016, had already signed a 5-year extension. So they were going to stick with him, or four-year extension. So there wasn't that constant speculation, whereas the Collingwood situation is he's up. His contract is up, and now Nathan Buckley's got to convince everyone around him that the direction is what he perceives the direction as, and not what the president's coming out and saying.
He's saying that they're not worried about any distraction or discord between him and the players. He said, we've all addressed that. We've all spoken about it. You've got the answers to those questions. He moved on really quickly from that in the press conference. So he doesn't see that as an issue at all. It was more so the fact that I love this quote, the general expectation on us greater than the capacity. That is as much to fans and media as I think it is to those above him. Let's change tack, because what an incredible win last night for Sydney. They were beaten in every major statistic except for the most important one, Michael Barlow, and that is the scoreboard. It was a 2-point thrilling win in the end of the Swans over the Cats, and people will talk about decisions that didn't go Geelong's way in the end. Did footy karma play a role in that? Well, this young man was one of the players pointed to that had a real impact on the outcome of that game. Ollie Florence being good enough to jump on the line with us on Sunday Crunch Time. He's got the honour of being our very first guest. He had 26 disposals, kicked 2 goals in that win. It was a win that looked like it meant so much. Ollie, congratulations. We saw the scenes after the game. There was a lot of hugging. There was a lot of emotion. There was a lot of joy. That win really seemed to mean something.
Hey, guys. Yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, it definitely did. We came out and won our first 4 games and got challenged the last couple of weeks. And that was something that we really wanted to turn around. And what a way to do it last night.
And Ollie McBarlow here, congratulations on the win. 6-2 in the first quarter. The Cats seem to have found their mojo off the back of that huge win against West Coast last week. And, you know, it was just a come out and a punch to the throat to your mob in the first quarter. But how you responded and what was the messaging from the coaching group and your leaders, of which stand up so regularly to get you guys back into the match?
Thanks, Mick. They came out and really jumped us in the first quarter. I think their contested footy was a lot better than ours, and they were able to, you know, chip the ball around, which is something that they like doing. I think the main message was really to just start winning contested footy and stop their uncontested marks a little bit more and send them down the line. And I guess it paid dividends in the end. But, the boys really responded after quarter time, which was nice.
Ollie, Matt Hill, congratulations last night and well done on your contribution. Tom Papley, first goal of the match, obviously the last goal of the match as well. But just to have him, he's just an energizer bunny, isn't it? Just to have that influence around the side, it must be fantastic.
It's priceless, really. Paps brings so much energy towards the group, and when he's on, the boys feed off him, and we stand a bit taller. He's a bromer of our team, and it's always nice to see him up and about. And he's very selfless as well, which is great.
And your leaders, you know, Dane Rampey yesterday, and that's what I think. You know, the 6-2 start to Geelong. We were looking at the list and who was going to lift, and it was just a mixture of your younger players and your older players. But I really want to harp on the influence of your Luke Parkers and your Josh Kennedys. They didn't have huge numbers last night, but it's that Swans Bloods mentality, I think, that is going to linger at that club for a long, long time. And those two guys in particular embrace that and carry a lot of the mantle.
Yeah, definitely. They lead from the front each week. I think it's really, really great for our side that, you know, these younger guys can step up and actually take the weight off their shoulders in big moments. I think that really goes a long way. Obviously, you can't be winning with 2 players. So for our weight of numbers last night was pretty good. And, it takes a lot of pressure off our leaders.
And not to discredit the victory, but have you been down to SCG this morning and you've got the tape measure out to see how far that kick was, Ollie? I'm thinking it was about 14 and a half. What were you thinking?
I couldn't hear anything, so I didn't hear a whistle. I thought that the play was still was just a mark, but I saw the umpire throw his hands up, and it was a bit of a blur to me.
It was a quarter that just came down to little moments, didn't it? I mean, you look at, as I said, you look at every major stat, and it should have been that you guys were getting flogged, but Geelong were inaccurate. So you get to stay in the game and you stay in the hunt, and then that all goes out the window, Ollie, in the last quarter, where just little moments and little wins happen, whether they be Papley's goal or Hayward's mark, or whether the siren had gone maybe 2 seconds later, Woodrow Bottom have been done for holding the ball. When you're in those moments, and you played a part in a lot of those as well, when you're in those moments, what's going through your mind when, for all intents and purposes, you think we've got no business being in this game, but we are? Does it free up your thinking? Where's your headspace in those final stages of a game?
I think, as you touched on before, the little wins is something that can really keep a team in the game. It's definitely just moment by moment stoppage. Every stoppage, just reset. Try stay as switched on as possible, I guess, in those moments. It's probably the hardest thing, but it's definitely, you know, if everyone can stay switched on the same page and just, you know, fight to the death, really, is it can get the team over the line, and it did last night, which was great.
I was just fascinated watching what was happening after that win. The joy and jubilation, Ollie, and you saw players going over to players who had one of those moments, and everybody was just getting around everybody. The guys that didn't play came down. The guys that, you know, maybe didn't have a good game were just so happy for the people that did have that contribution. I can't remember seeing something like that from a side, from a regular season win. Why do you think it was that it meant so much?
I guess we're just a really, you know, united team. We're such a great close group, and we really thrive on seeing each other do well, and especially the Twos boys yesterday. They're so involved in our success, and so the seniors and the Twos guys. And I think we make it a focus that we try and reward the little things. And it just makes you want to play for your teammate that little bit more when you know someone's going to go out of their way to do something for you. So it just, it sort of snowballs from there, and we've sort of made that a bit of a focus. And it shows after the games with the emotions and stuff like that.
And as a young player, you're 22 years of age, a match like that, it'll go down as one of the great matches of the year. For you personally, to be a part of an epic like that, it must just lift you as your career goes on.
Yeah, we've been on the end of those. It's a really hard feeling to sort of pill to swallow, I guess, and it's always good to be on the other side of them. To be in a win like that last night meant a lot to the group. It was just more that we got challenged last week, and we made it a focus that we want to turn it around this week, and just sort of riding that wave of footy. And who knows what could happen next week, but we're gonna have it, do our best. And yeah,
Ollie, we've got a question for you off the text. We got a running text machine here on crunch time, and it's a great one because I reckon you might have been maybe in the vicinity, if I'm not mistaken, with that call at the end that Mickey Barlow alluded to, the non-mark paid to Jeremy Cameron. Did the umpire call not 15 play on, or did the umpire call touched play on?
I'm pretty sure it was not 15 play on.
Players, Sam, have a tendency in these situations to lose their sense of hearing and sight. So Ollie's answering all these very, very, very.
Having said
very
that, there were 25,000 screaming people there. Yeah. It sounded pretty loud to me.
Good call. I want to touch on this one really quickly. We mentioned the Will Hayward mark, and it was a huge moment. I think he owed you guys one because he took that advantage play on and tried to snap a goal from 30 out, and it was didn't go to plan. And then the TV cameras spanned to John Longmire, who a few expletives might have come out. Was that brought up after the game in terms of he did redeem himself and go back with a flight and set up that last scoring foray?
I spoke to him after the game, and he said that he couldn't hear much as well. Sort of a common theme going on around here, but I know Callum Sinclair was more worried for his sake about the meeting on Monday if things hadn't all gone to plan. But he ended up redeeming himself, yes. And, yeah, you know, in those moments, sort of, you can't hear much, but you probably should have just a lot over the court.
Hey, Ollie, it's been wonderful to have you on. You've got a massive clash against Melbourne next week at the MCG. So big stage, big-time opponent on a Saturday night. Who are you expecting to get back from what you understand from the players that are injured at the moment?
To be honest, I'm not really too sure. I'm going to have to leave that in the hands of the medical staff. I'm hoping that we can, you know, get players back, get our leaders back, but things we'll plan as normal. We'll train, and if the blokes can get up and train, that's awesome. If not, we're still going to go out and do the exact same thing. So it's the beauty about our team is that we've got plenty of depth and blokes that can play roles when our big stars are out. So, yeah.
Ollie, congratulations again. It's a memorable win for the club in a season that you've been dishing up a lot of good wins. So we hope for your sake that's able to continue. Good luck next week against the D's.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Ollie Florence had a really good game. 26 disposals, 2 goals, as I said, and just continues to progress in his career. Off the text, we love Ollie. He is a beast at the moment. Love his inside and his outside work. Stop talking Sydney up. The Frees weren't paid. End of story. Okay, well, let's talk about Geelong then. On the other side of this, when you have 10 more scoring shots than the opposition, when you have plus 80 in disposals, plus 26 in inside 50s, plus 3 in centre clearances, plus 33 in contested possession, plus 68 in uncontested possession, you were minus 11 in turnover, but you were minus 1 for Mark's inside 50 as well. That points so much more glaringly at you than it does any umpiring decision. And when you've had them go your way before, and it was great to see Chris Scott didn't want to even pay that any mind. He said, we made mistakes, they made mistakes, umpires made mistakes. He much preferred to focus on the things that they didn't get right than blame umpires.
And you get what you deserve at the highest level of sport. And along the journey of four quarters, Sydney just had better moments in those big moments.
Just on that, though, what did you think of that last?
Let's hold that thought because okay, we've got to come back. Let's get a quick update for the ladder for 40 Winks. Get 40 months interest-free at the 40 Winks 40-hour sale. Western Bulldogs on top, as we know, undefeated. Lost that first game to Richmond on Friday night. Melbourne have a chance to leapfrog them in the game that's coming up shortly against North Melbourne. Port Adelaide still in third. Sydney into fourth now. Geelong into fifth. Richmond sixth. The Lions into seventh. Fremantle hanging on to eighth spot. And a game outside the eight. The Suns, the Giants, the Eagles, the Crows and St Kilda after their thumping of Hawthorn. You're listening to Sunday Crunch Time, the first ever brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max Born to Live.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu, the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max Born to Live.
Well, I'm trying to be a bit glass half full. That's always a challenge when you're so disappointed in a result like that. But if I stay with the glass half full approach, it's unusual to dominate a game like that statistically and not get the result. So, you know, without reeling off too many stats, plus 26 inside 50s, you don't even lose when that happens. And you know, plus 80, 90 possessions, you know, virtually every statistical measure was our way, scoring shots by 8. But the other side of it is, there's no good saying, oh, look, we played really well, we just didn't execute, because execution's a key part of playing well. And the opposition, especially after quarter time, played well, and they executed really well. Their accuracy in front of goal was probably the difference in the game, 12-6 to whatever it was.
Chris Scott, after Geelong's 2-point loss to Sydney last night at the SCG, they had 10 more scoring shots and were on top in every major statistic by a long way, except the one that matters most when the siren sounds, and that is the scoreboard. This is Sunday Crunch Time, brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max Born to Live. The Sunday Crunch, Sam Hargraves, Matt Hill and Michael Barlow with you. The big issue from that game, Michael Barlow, Matt Hill was just about to ask you this before we had to go to a break before.
Well, it's the water cooler question that everyone will be talking about tomorrow. Was it holding the ball? The last play of the match, it was James Rowbottom. And he's cuddled the ball, literally he's bent down and cuddled the ball, so he showed no intent to get rid of it at any stage, which is surely in the rules, but is it holding the ball?
Matty, I think he was saved by the bell. I feel you're right. He fell on the ball, was tackled, but was there enough time in terms of, you know, time for Rowbottom to start to show intent? I literally think it was a half
second. But he
was
never going to show intent,
yeah,
was he?
And that's why if the siren had have sounded at half to a second later, I still haven't seen any vision of if there was some vision of an umpire, if they were starting to do their little circle up and get
yeah,
their,
they
get
do
the
like
whistle
the wind
ready.
Up.
I feel like the wind-up was coming for the set shot.
Sort of cattle dog style,
yeah,
wasn't it? They just like to get around on an angle and swoop
yeah.
in.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. Behind the goals footage will come up. We've got Kane Coyne joining us later. He's got every bit of vision ever that's existed in the AFL, so he'll be able to let us know what that umpire was doing right as the buzzer went.
You mentioned the footy karma idea, which I like, but I'm also fascinated by an umpire's point of view. He would have got howled out of the joint if he paid it. We have 25,000 screaming swans. It's a clutch moment for an umpire, isn't it? It's huge.
Footy karma, Matty, Brisbane Geelong, GMHBA Stadium.
Absolutely.
Mark Blitzarves, merry-go-round. Zach Bailey tackles, throws the ball out, no free kick. So maybe we've just evened the ledger with the James Rowbottom, Joel Selwood, and the Jeremy Cameron 50-metre pass. That's
and more often than not, footy does even itself out over time. Someone off the text saying that you don't get the rub of the green in Sydney from the umpires. Marcus saying it's always tough, as Geelong found out. Well, Geelong won the free kick count 22-16. So they were plus six for free kicks in the end. So I don't know if the you know really the umpires play that part. And I love the fact that Chris Scott wasn't entertaining that in any way, shape or form. He doesn't look at that. He looks at what happened during the course of the game. And he looks at the fact that they were five goals up early in that game. And then what didn't they do and what did Sydney do to get themselves back in?
And Geelong, it's starting probably to become a worrying trend for them. The grand final was similar last year. They had a big lead. They had a stretch of lead and Richmond came back into the game. Last night, similar. They were out by four or five goals and Sydney could claw their way back. And Geelong just couldn't change that gear or shut the game down for that, you know, 10 to 15 minute period, which would have allowed them, to maintain that leg rope of a lead. So that's my issue with Geelong at the moment is, yes, they play really well the way they train and play usually, but when they're exposed with that, they don't have a plan B and plan C, which would be very effective in situations like that, just to slow the game down and take the air out of what Sydney were providing.
And this is off the text as well. Maybe Chris Scott needs to ask his players how they let Sydney back in the game after leading all the game stats. And that's the question that will be far more pertinent to Chris Scott than an umpiring decision that may or may not have gone their way or shouldn't have gone their way, just like it was for Chris Fagan in the game that you bring up down at GMHBA Stadium. And Chris Scott was great in pointing out that Geelong made mistakes, Sydney made mistakes, umpires make mistakes. It is football, and that is how it goes. We seem so hell-bent at times on never wanting to hold players to account unless you're one of those people that wants to abuse them on social media. But it seems we're far more keen to say the umpire lost us that game rather than go and have a look at those stats and go, geez, we were plus 80 disposals, plus 26 inside 50s, plus 33 contested possessions.
Across 120 minutes of football where you have your opportunities. But I will spin the question around. What do you think, Matt, Sam, in terms of that holding the ball decision?
Late? I think two more seconds and it's holding the ball, but the siren goes.
Mm. Yeah.
So it wasn't the right call or the wrong call. It was the siren sounded.
Rowbottom was playing dead fish. He would have been very good at that at primary school, the way he just collapsed and lost all function of any limb.
He went full possum. He just froze.
And, of course, you're assuming that Cameron's goes back and kicks the goal too with the 15-metre kick. I mean, it was the hardest kick of the night if he was to put it through.
Siren gone, so he would have gone back. But you can take that, like, one to two steps out.
He'd be the right person to have
with
the ball.
Yeah, to favour his left boot. So a big moment, which we'll never know the ending of because it didn't eventuate and Sydney get home by 2 points.
It is. And Chris, as we've just said, what will be more concerning to him is just how they let that game slip. And then he spoke about the fact that he doesn't speak to players straight away after the game. They'll go away and have a look at it and review it. I think the most fascinating Chris Scott press conference is going to be the one that comes during the week after he has had time to go back, have a look, and figure out just how on earth they were able to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. But full credit to the Swans, they were able to take their chances. They were kept in the game from inaccurate kicking, and they were able to take their chances when it mattered most. Ken Hinckley, another question. Do Port Adelaide, this might be jumping the gun a little bit, do Port Adelaide have a travel issue when it comes to playing top eight sides? Let's have a listen to Ken Hinckley after the loss first, before you answer that, Michael Barlow.
Anyone who watched it would see this, the simple message, and that's what I said to the boys, it was a simple message. The ability to stand up in the contest for long enough, they were able to do it, you know, and credit, that's their strength was their strength, and we made it look even better, I reckon, tonight, because we couldn't handle, you know, some of the contest stuff. We got on top at centre bounce early. We had the ball where we'd like it to be, and but we then weren't good enough in the contest in front of the ball. So it all revolves around contest, and whether that, you know, as you point out, the last four times, I think you said, that they've beaten us, there's been different reasons, but same reasons.
So Ken Hinckley, after Port Adelaide went down to the Lions by 49 points at the Gabba, it was a statement game for the Lions, but from a Port point of view, David King said during the week that at their best, Port Adelaide are the best. Mm. But Brisbane came to play in a side that was missing Lachie Neale, Jared Berry, Darcy Gardner, their second most important defender. Cam Rayner, obviously, we know, out of the game. And Port had their injuries too. Let's not forget that, as every club does. But when you look at Port Adelaide on the road this year, Michael Barlow, they beat North in round one. They lost to the Eagles over in WA, which they won't be Robinson Crusoe there. They get a win over Carlton on the road. But this was a test against a top eight side from last year, and that, to the tune of 49 points. Would you have thought that Port Adelaide are a 49-point worse off side than Brisbane going into this game?
Not, but I vividly remember, this is a couple of years ago now, round three, 2019, Brisbane did a similar job on Port Adelaide in those conditions. And there's a lot to be said about those conditions, those dewy kind of Brisbane night conditions, which the ball becomes slippery. It becomes like a wet weather game. And Brisbane were clean, whereas Port Adelaide weren't. So that was in 2009. And that was the shifting of the needle for Brisbane in to become the side we know them as today. And then, yeah, last night, Port Adelaide are a team that I saw live, 2 weeks ago against Carlton for AFL Nation. And it was breathtaking, some of their passages of play, but it was a very nice night. It was mild and the ball was zipping around, and are Carlton, you know, a top eight side? Probably not. So there is that concern, I think, for Port Adelaide at the moment against those top sides, because we saw what happened against West Coast and again last night. Without Lachie Neale, you know, the forward mix didn't really work for Port Adelaide last night, whereas Fantasia's been very good, but players like him just had really off nights.
Just on that, Harris Andrews was one of the major reasons why their forward line wasn't able to function. He comes off getting six kicked on him by a one-legged Harry Mackay last week. He had 10 marks to Charlie Dixon's one. He dominated the airwaves. He really did come to play. He was enormous in that job on Dixon, who a lot of their forward line efficiency depends on. So they were 34%. Efficiency inside forward 50, Port Adelaide, compared to 55% for Brisbane, whose forward line now, with Dan McStay having come back in, and Chris Fagan spoke about the important role that he plays in releasing Gardner and Hipwood. And then Charlie Cameron is the beneficiary as well with four goals. So it Port Adelaide's major issue last night was that efficiency inside forward 50.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of that forward mix I spoke about, Marshall, 7 possessions, no goals. Fantasia, 7 possessions, no goals. Georgiadis, a young player, 8 possessions, no goals. Boyd Woodcock, 9 possessions, 1 goal. So Brisbane, and I think your point on Harris Andrews is really pertinent in terms of, I don't think he's had a great year, Harris Andrews. And he would have been sitting back thinking, nah, it's time to get to work. And what an opportunity. Charlie Cameron, you know, Port Adelaide are flying, let's go. And he did.
I think he's had about 19 goals kicked on him this year, which, and Chris Fagan spoke about saying that he's one of the best people that he's ever met in football. So he's been not happy with his own performance, did the work during the week, came out to play against one of the best key forwards in the competition and got a big win. And then the team gets a big win off the back of that. So McCluggage as well is having an All-Australian year. 30 disposals. Yep. He kicked 1-3. That's still an issue for him. 6 clearances, 12 score involvements, and well over 500 metres gained. He just continues to improve.
Yep.
Very soon he will surely be discussed as one of the elite players in the game.
And stiff not to be acknowledged last year in an All-Australian jacket was Hugh McCluggage. So really good player. You know, Charlie Cameron's getting going, and yeah, Brisbane are a watch.
There's the Crunch, brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to live. We've still got St Kilda on the agenda. Mm. What happened to Adelaide yesterday? They were the most accurate team. They set goal-kicking accuracy records last week, and then didn't it just turn on its head yesterday against the Giants? You can get involved with us, 0433 98 11 16. Sean, off the text, no excuses for Geelong, but you cannot miss the worrying trend. Umpires have not had the courage to make the big calls late in games, not just this game, but a few this year. If that was a second quarter, it's paid. And off the text as well, from the other point of view, boys, AFL or local footy, when you have 10 more scoring shots and a 5-goal lead early, the answers, if you lose, are in the mirror. Cheers. That's from Block in Ringwood. Nicely done. You're listening to Sunday Crunch Time, brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to live.
A sports news update for Rold. Family-made Vietnamese served fast and fresh.
Hi, it's Judd Boaz checking other sport. In the NRL, the Penrith Panthers remain undefeated this season, taking down Manly 28-16 for their 8th win on the trot. The Eels dispatched the bottom of the table Bulldogs 32-10, while the Roosters crushed Newcastle 38-4. Ash Barty is into the third round of the Madrid Open after a shaky 3-set win over world number 80 Tamara Zidanec. She'll face last year's French Open winner Iga Swiatek in the next round. And the Brumbies are through to the Super Rugby AU final after defeating the Western Force 21-9. The game was marred by a controversial red card to Western Force winger Tony Pulu, which helped the Brumbies climb back from an early 3-0 deficit to win. They'll meet the Queensland Reds in a rematch of last year's final, which the Brumbies won 28-23. That's the latest sport for Rolled, Fast, Fresh Vietnamese.
You're listening to Crunch Time, brought to you by Isuzu, the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to live.
Still got to work through Saints, Hawks, Crows and Giants before we turn our attention to North Melbourne and Melbourne. Some news coming out of that. Jack Viney, a late out with foot soreness. Oscar Baker comes into the side. Nathan Jones, after his 300th game last week, is the sub. And if they are able to win this game, it will be his 100th win in his career in his 301st game. It'll be the first time as well that he has been in a Melbourne side that has finished on top of the ladder at the end of a round. Thanks to Ats the Swamp Thing for that stat. Before we get into those games, let's get an odds update.
An odds update, proudly brought to you by PointsBet. Download the PointsBet app today. Gamble responsibly. Call 1-800-858-858.
G'day punters, Elliot from PointsBet, previewing the game this afternoon. Melbourne versus North Melbourne. The D's pretty much unbackable with us at PointsBet. $1.02, North big outsiders, $14, and just under a 10-goal start on the line with us, plus 57.5 at PointsBet. The elite odds offering it every single game this round. Christian Petrarca and Kaziah Pickett to combine for 4 or more goals, a huge $3 at PointsBet in the elite odds. And a quick look at the first goal scorer markets as well. Ben Brown at $7.50, along with Bailey Fritch. Tom McDonald at $10. And Pickett has firmed in 13-10 to kick the first at PointsBet. And the early payout, it's back from next week as well. Friday night, if you lead at three-quarter time, you win. We'll pay your head-to-head bet out as a winner. T's and C's do apply. So jump onto pointsbet.com.au, download the app, and as always, gamble responsibly.
Big thanks to PointsBet. Both teams, North Melbourne and Melbourne, completing their warm-ups for Ream. Installer Ream, Australia's favourite. In hot water, of course, North Melbourne and Melbourne today at Blundstone Arena. Before we get to those, Crows, let's start with the Saints and the Hawks. Saints defeated Hawthorn by 69 points last night, Michael Barlow. Brett Ratten said it was about what they were prepared to do for each other. Mm. Not the scoreline, but about what they were prepared to do for each other to win that game. And nothing epitomised that more than Brad Hill. Don't worry about the 27 disposals. Mm. The two smothers were what would have endeared him even more so to St Kilda fans.
And speaking of a season on a knife's edge, that was St Kilda, wasn't it? So that response needed to happen. And now I think from St Kilda's point of view, it's they've got to maintain that ruthless edge going into their next week's match against the Suns at Metricon. So, yes, it's nice. I think St Kilda fans, St Kilda players will feel nice, but they have to back that up now.
4 goals to Higgins. Sorry, Matty. Butler got 3. King kicked 2-4. And Nathan Jones, his highest ever disposal count in the game, 37 and 2 goals.
Zach Jones. Nathan Jones will be out here today. Nathan?
Did I say Nathan? Well, his brother Zach. I thought
we'll
I said Zach.
We'll have to go to the tape.
We might have to go to the tape. Matty,
I might be wrong, Sammy.
Crows and Giants.
Yes, well, this was a big one yesterday, wasn't it? Couldn't believe the scoreline when I first saw it. Mm. Jesse Hogan kicks 4 for the Giants. Of course, he'd formerly played at Melbourne and Fremantle. And he's teaming up there with Himmelberg and Sam Reed up front, which is really good signs for the Giants. But on the other side of the coin, Adelaide 16-3 last week. Flip that around 4-15 this week.
Yeah, unbelievable, Matty. In terms of stats, we talked a lot about Sydney having no statistic domination at all and getting the result, whereas the Giants just absolutely obliterated Adelaide in all the key areas. Stoppage, plus 20. And, you know, giving your team the opportunity to have ground position was very important yesterday. And the Giants played the game in their front half. The most important Giant, right up there in the discussion with Toby Green, is Lachie Whitfield, who came in, had 30 possessions, used the ball really, really well. And that's what they've lacked, that polish and maturity, you know, on the wings and halfbacks.
After what he's been through this year with the injury that he's been coming back from with the kidney, I believe it was, it's just extraordinary to see him go into the middle and just be fit as a fiddle. Yeah. Obviously, he's been working diligently on his rehab. He had 30. Taranto had 35. And Dennis's son, Jacob Hopper, was massive as well. And Tom Green, two goals to go with 22 disposals for him. Before we finish up, because we do have to come back very shortly and get into this North Melbourne game, I do a lot of following at the Swamp Thing. It's the only reason why I've still got Twitter. But this is what I love, and this is how we're going this year. If you're loving the footy, love it for this very stat here. Seasons where there was at least one game each round decided by under 4 points in each of the first seven rounds, 1937 and 2021. So that's what we're dishing up this year, and hopefully it continues on in the same vein of that. Big news today coming out of the West. They've had some community cases testing positive, some community transmission cases of COVID. There will be no crowds at the Derby this afternoon between the Eagles and the Dockers. How big is that, Mickey B? You've won 3 Ross Glendinning medals in this game, and it's the biggest occasion on the footy calendar.
It's a Frio away game, so I would have really enjoyed it, because you go play West Coast, it used to be my day at Subiaco, and there was no more confronting environment than a West Coast home game in a derby. But yeah, disappointing no crowds, but Frio for me later on, Sammy.
North Melbourne and Melbourne on the other side of this. That was Sunday Crunch Time, brought to you by the 3-litre Isuzu D-Max, born to live.
You're listening to AFL Nation. For Beaumont Tiles, bathroom packages, choose Beaumonts. And Hard Yakka, for a new breed of legends.